These are real people. They do have struggles.
And it starts to get on my nerves. I just shut down.
So many people suffer from mental illness.
To get the word out that men have got to start talking.
A lot of people don't understand the depth of the situation, so they can't appreciate,
It's difficult dealing with our minds, and the suicidal thoughts were back.
People knew that there was something not right, but they just never really said anything or probably felt like it wasn't their place to say anything.
You're not depressed, it's all in your head. That's probably the statement I've had people say the most.
I mean, this shit is real, and it's hard, it's exhausting.
Sometimes you need somebody to just give you permission.
And I think people realize how helpful that one conversation can be just to figure out why you are feeling the way you are.
Not only did this help me to write it, it potentially might have helped some other people as well. So it sort of started from there.
People just want to know that they're safe to talk and share these things.
So many people think they're alone. And then you hear other people talk about it and they think, oh, that's so brave, or I could relate to that. And then they want to talk about it.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Open Journal podcast. I hope you're well. I hope things are good for you right now. And I'm delighted to say in this episode, we are joined by a new guest. Adam is with us. We're going to be talking about Adam's short film, Grace and Vale. Parts of Grace and Vale and the conversation that we have include talking about depression, suicide prevention and awareness. We don't go into heavy details, but this is a topic that we talk about repeatedly throughout our conversation. So if this is not a conversation for you right now, please feel free to skip this episode and maybe check out one of the other amazing conversations on the podcast. Additionally, if at any time during this conversation or at the end of it you'd like to access support, have a look at Samaritans, Mind, or a range of other mental health charities that offer support. Samaritans are the best place to go, I always think. You can access support through their website, through phone line or text message services as well. And through Mind, you can find out where your local Mind service is and potentially access that as well. So I'll leave links to those in the show notes if you would like to access those. Again, a huge thank you to Adam for coming on and providing some insights and some expertise around the media side that goes into creating this theatrical production, and the journey that Adam has been on as well, pulling this story together. It's been really interesting to hear about that, so a big thank you to Adam. And if you're inspired by Adam coming on and sharing insights, please do have a look at the website where you can find out more information about being a guest yourself, which is openjournalbc.com. Here's our conversation. Adam, it's lovely to sit down and have the opportunity to chat with you today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like the weather is about to change. I feel like I'm getting ready for spring. I've had too many conversations now about it's about to get warmer, it's about to get sunnier. I feel like I'm becoming more optimistic by default of like, oh, the weather's going to be great soon.
Yes, I mean, it was a complete washout last month. And now, like you say, I feel as though spring is in the air and the sun's coming out, and that makes us feel better. Automatically, I think.
I know. I don't know enough science biology as to why that is. there's a more of a smile comes to my face when I think about, oh, okay. I mean, I like a nice wet rainy day, but it's nice to have some warmth and some sun as well.
Well, because I think from an ancestral point of view, we associate warmth with fire and being close together, whereas when you're cold, you're away from people. And if you're thinking of like old cavemen and women wandering around through the icy landscapes of prehistory, being cold is, I suppose, deep rooted in our psyche as being a sign of danger and not a good place to be. So I think that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. That's a really interesting way to almost like the danger of the cold. Not the cold, but being cold and everything that can come with that as well. We sort of naturally rolled it into some spring chat there, but are there other things that you're doing at the moment that are helping keep you well and positive and kind of enjoying your life at the moment?
Ooh, that's a good question. I I mean, I love working, and I'm juggling lots of plates at the moment. I teach at a digital upskilling provider in Brighton, where we teach film editing and film production, and I do that on a regular basis. But in addition to that, when I have time, I also work on lots of film productions. So a recent production I worked on was for B&Q, the new B&Q advert, where I worked as a sound recordist. And so I'm doing that as well, and bits and pieces on the side. But the main reason which I'm coming to speak to you today is about a short film, which I'm hoping to produce, and that's called Grace and Vale. And it's a short drama about the devastating consequences of mental illness and the transformative power of kindness between strangers. It tells the story of a lawyer named Grayson, who one night amid a severe bout of depression arrives at a multi-story car park with the view to taking his own life. However, following a chance encounter with a student named Simone, he's jolted out of he's jolted into seeing the world with a fresh pair of eyes, and he falls inexorably under her spell. And so it's a drama which touches on many grave themes, but I think it has moments of romantic intrigue and humor as well. So I think it will be an interesting project. The screenplay is currently in competition at the Rain Dance Film Festival, and subject to a successful crowdfunding campaign, we hope to shoot it later on this year. So that's keeping me very busy at the moment, and there's lots of promotional things I need to do with that, and actually getting the production off the ground itself as well. So we're looking to cast the production in the next couple of months, so yeah, that's keeping me busy as well.
That sounds very busy and really interesting, and we'll ask you a bit more about the kind of the film production as well. Is there, it sounds like, I guess if someone hasn't heard about yourself or the work that you're doing at the moment, a real mixture of, like, I don't know, a traditional career, like really socially acceptable stuff, and then this, like, the mental health production that's going into an area or a topic that maybe we still see quite sort of stigmatized, often in maybe like mainstream media or mainstream conversation within our communities and society. I'd like to think it's getting a lot, it has got a lot better, but there's still a way to go. How did kind of your journey with that project start? Because it seems so different from some of the other work that you're doing that you've mentioned there.
Well, by way of a sort of a small introduction, I went to film school in Brighton, and following my graduation, I decided to set up a production company and called PM Films Limited, and the aim of which was to produce commercials and corporate videos and so forth. And I had some success doing that, I still do it. But in the wake of the pandemic, all of the work dried up because of lockdown. And as a consequence of that, I decided to sort of shift gear slightly and go into teaching. And that's how I ended up working in Brighton as an instructor at a digital upskilling provider. And in the midst of the lockdown, in the midst of the pandemic, by far the biggest safeguarding issue were related to mental health issues, particularly depression, anxiety, low mood, and so forth. And this came up quite a lot, and it really sort of got me thinking about what might be the causes behind those issues that came up. And that was the inspiration behind it, I would say. And so I decided to write a script about it. And it took me a few goes at it, because mental health is quite a complex area, particularly to do justice on film, and that's how we got where we are today.
It's really interesting hearing you talk through as well, that, like you say, the impact that the pandemic had both at the time and kind of, I feel like we're at the end of that initial period now where we're like, oh, how does life happen again, and what are we doing? But I think we're also yet to see the longer term impacts of what that's had, especially for people that maybe had some sort of transitional moment during those years. So sort of my mind's drawn a lot to people that are leaving education or starting education, maybe had career changes or relationship changes, if you moved, lots of big things. If that's happened during that kind of, I guess, like 2 year window where there were lots of different social restrictions, I think we're yet to see maybe what the longer term impact of that was. And when you're talking about quite sort of critical and sometimes complex mental health struggles and illnesses, there's a lot of, I think, thinking and conversation that needs to happen to realize that potential danger of the topic that you're looking at around kind of suicide prevention as well.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think the pandemic was unprecedented and the response to it was quite unprecedented. And I think people, when they were cooped up in their homes and so forth, with very little to do, it lent a different kind of perspective on our lives and our careers and so forth. And I think it did cause a lot of issues for a lot of people who had never been in this situation before. And I suppose it was something that I reflected on quite a lot when I was during the pandemic. And I suppose there is a bit of me in the script in that sense as well. So, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's such a, like you say, unprecedented. Like you've not been in a situation like that before. Well, most people alive will have not been in a situation like that before, and to be so removed from. Like often we'll come on and the first bit of like, what do you do to keep yourself well, and what are the things that help keeping you positive? In the past, people will mention things like going to the cinema, concerts, you know, going out and seeing basically all of the things you couldn't do for 2 years. That's going to have a massive impact, almost regardless of whether you have a mental health struggle or illness or not. And then if you do, the impact, from my point of view, I think the impact is so much greater. So hearing and seeing projects like yours, where it brings these topics to the forefront and makes them with kind of real people and real characters, rather than, you know, there's usefulness in 30-second and 2-minute videos and awareness raising things, but to really get people to think and to be affected by characters and stories, as we would be with so many other aspects of our life, relationships and careers are reflected on through film and media and theatre.
Absolutely.
Why not this other thing that actually, I mean, personal investment here, but are actually way more important. And yet we sort of avoid talking about them almost because of their importance, maybe.
Yes. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think the pandemic was sort of the apotheosis of many issues that have been building up for some time. I mean, if you look at the statistics around mental health, I think all the trends are pointing in the wrong direction, and it has been for about 10, 15 years now, particularly in the wake of the banking crisis. I think there is definitely a correlation between economic hardship and poor mental health. It's interesting, if you look at the northeast of England, for example, it's probably one of the most deprived parts of the UK. It is also the region where there is most reported suicides as well. Likewise, in London, it's one of the wealthiest parts of the UK, but it's also the part of the UK where they report the lowest levels of suicide. So I think there is definitely a correlation. And according to a report by, I think it was Mind, I think the number of men in particular have experiencing suicidal thoughts have doubled over the past 10 years. So I think there is a long-term trend that we're not really addressing. And I felt these were all things that I was interested in exploring in the script.
Yeah. It's such an important topic, isn't it? I know. I'm not sure if I'm thinking of the same report. I know Mind and I think Samaritans and somewhere else as well have done reports on kind of suicide awareness stats. And also I think there's some work as well now into kind of pre-post COVID impact. But that aspect of kind of realizing how many people this affects, and also the way we talk about it sometimes as well, I think is not always the most helpful. I think from my point of view, sometimes it comes across as a topic that's it affects these people rather than this affects everybody. And I think through the nature of something that is quite stigmatized, like even more so than just mental health illnesses in general, like,
yes,
how do you respond to a conversation if someone says they've experienced thoughts of self-harm or suicidal thinking? It's a thing I think most people are not equipped for, not ready for, not confident to have that conversation.
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I do have a couple of theories on that. But I think as I was writing the script, this particularly came up. And I think part of the problem, I think, with talking about mental health is that it's invisible. And because it's invisible, you experience a phenomenon that philosophers talk about quite a lot, and that's qualia. And that is to say, it's impossible, really, to everyone's. Let me put it this way: it's very easy. Everyone knows what depression is. We all know what it means, but we don't. When I try and describe it, what depression is to you, how it makes me feel, it's almost impossible to convey. In the same way that, say, if I gash my arm today, you could look at that gash in the arm and you could with some certainty know how painful that cut would be for me by how deep it is, whether I need a bandage and so forth. That you could, to articulate that's quite easy, but to understand feelings in with the degree of depth that you can with a physical injury is almost, it's almost impossible to do that. And moreover, if you take a physical condition like cancer, there are over 100 different types of cancer diagnoses, whereas depression or anxiety, it seems quite, to me anyway, as a layman, I'm not a doctor or a psychologist, but it seems quite abstract. It's very difficult to try and categorize in my mind, and I think it's that's the case also for many other people as well.
I really like the idea of comparing to something that's like visually accessible. I don't know if I phrased that right, but I've definitely heard this. I'm not sure if this is true, but I think men are also more visual. So I wonder if that feeds into that idea of without being able to see something, can touch it and understand it, it makes having this empathy, this kind of higher level understanding of what depression is or can be, and other kind of similar illnesses, quite becomes more tricky, because as you say, you can't see it, you can't touch it, it's different from me than it is to you, but yet we might sit under the same banner or label. And that often, I think, again, making a big generalization here with men, is that we're uncomfortable with things we don't know. Anything that's a change or outside of what we have knowledge, maybe even expertise of, we're very uncomfortable. And so the idea that this thing that exists that we don't really know, we don't really understand, the first time we come across it is either when we struggle or we think someone we know might be struggling. There's very little, you don't go in on Monday and think, right, this week's the week I'm going to learn about this. And, you know, it's often through a moment of struggle or crisis that you are introduced in the first place. So there's no sort of, you're not starting from a solid base, becomes a very difficult area to learn about and to have true empathy. I think it comes, but not necessarily right at the beginning. And like you say, I think that side of, there are so many versions and complexities with depression. And I mean, depression is, I would say, the most common of kind of the mental health illnesses that you can have. And yet that is so complicated, let alone, you know, if you look at something that to me is more complex, like schizophrenia. And I think that can often be the thing, again, that puts people off getting involved, because they don't want to be made uncomfortable by being involved in those conversations of something they're not sure on. You've got to be open to going, I know like this little bit, and I would like to know more, or be able to support myself or someone I know. And I'm open to the fact I'm not going to know everything. Even if I did, I won't know what it's like for you. I will only know, like you say, the definition of, here, I can read you a definition of something, but that's not what it is for you. And I think that's the thing. We're not always, I don't know, not always encouraged to be in those kind of situations or those environments where, like, I'm here to listen, I'm here to help, but I don't know.
Yes. And even sufferers don't necessarily know that they might have a condition. I mean, when does low mood end and depression begin? It's a very difficult line to sort of ascertain at times, I think. And coming back to the script that I wrote, it was a real sort of challenge to try and sort of articulate that in terms of dialogue and visually as well, because I don't think, generally speaking, people have the language to articulate this in a way which is, that would resonate. But let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. And so the way I tackled that was actually to take things out. The less that characters articulated the way they felt, the audience could surmise how they felt through what they don't say. And I think that's the approach which I think turned out to be the most powerful. And it took me quite a while to realize that, because I ended up writing loads of stuff, and I look at it at the cold light of day and go, I'm not sure really people sound like that really in real life. But as soon as I started taking things out, it seemed to start working. And it was quite an interesting experience in that respect.
Different to, I guess, some of the other work you're doing, where there's a lot of maybe information you're trying to convey, when in this situation, as we've just said, like, there's different interpretations to the same word, to the same illness, to the same diagnosis. And actually having that space that you're allowing allows maybe some variation of interpretation. And that's maybe where you get kind of a I don't want to say better, that sounds but I can't think of another word, like a better reaction from audiences, because they're able to have those different experiences and maybe come away and have a discussion about some of the topics or the scenes that they've seen and how they interpreted that situation, rather than being told they're part of it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yes. I think by leaving things sort of open-ended, let me put it that way, I think audiences, readers, or both, can bring their own humanity to it. And I think that I think is the magic of cinema and of storytelling more generally.
Yeah, so interesting. It'd be so interesting to hear and see reviews of people that experience Grace and Vale, but also other projects that are along these lines as well. I think hearing those insights that are of sort of real mental health well-being focused conversations, like, not exclusively, there's other things I can tell, even from the brief things you've mentioned, there are other things happening in this story with these characters that is, you know, not exclusively mental health and well-being related. There are other aspects to this story. They are kind of, I don't know, air quotes doesn't work on a podcast, does it? But sort of real people, there are aspects to characters and to their journeys. And I think that's a really positive way to see these stories and these characters told, because otherwise it becomes slightly too abstract and it's not, these are not real people. Again, you turn into sort of this, I don't know, like case study situation. There's this abstract person A and person B having actual characters with different aspects to them, I think is a really powerful way to tell these mental health stories.
Yes, well, I think that's very important when you're, irrespective of what story you're telling, that the characters are well-rounded and interesting. And I took quite a lot of time to flesh those characters out. It is quite challenging insofar as making a short film is concerned, because you have quite a finite period of time in order to tell your story. So you have to be quite efficient and concise in the way that you convey that information. But I think I've done a reasonably good job at that process of characterization.
And you said earlier, kind of, there are directions that you want to go with this production, and what are the sort of things you're hoping will come up? As like we said, we're moving into spring now, like 2024 is getting underway. What's the direction you are looking to go in for the future?
Well, there's two significant things we have to bridge in the next few months. The first is the cast. So earlier this year, we launched a casting call for actors and actresses to come forward to play the parts of Grayson and Simone. And we've had about 80 applicants so far put their hat in the ring, which is really, really exciting. I was sort of expecting two or three people to come across, but then I bet all these people came across. I'm like, wow, a lot of people have to go through. And
it's going to need to allow a bit more time for this.
Exactly. And so, yes, I'm going through all the CVs at the moment and drawing up a short list. And then once we have that in place, we plan to launch a Kickstarter campaign to raise the money to produce the film, because you need money to make a film, of course. And then if that's successful, then we'll go off and shoot it in late summer, autumn time. That's the plan. And then we'll film it, edit it, and then we'll submit it into film festivals and hopefully get the largest possible audience for the film that we make. And one of the rewards that we are offering on the Kickstarter campaign, which I think is going to be quite exciting, is tickets to the debut screening of the film, which will also be a concert as well, because I think a big part of the short will be music as well. And we have a very talented award-winning singer-songwriter named Carrie Higgs, who's creating the score for the film, and she's creating an original song she's currently working on at the moment, which is very exciting. She's very secret squirrel about it. I don't know too much about it, but she said, you know, don't worry, Adam, it's going to be really, really good, just leave it to me. And so that will be ready in the next couple of months. And so for the screening, we're going to have the screening of the actual film, but then afterwards we're going to have a performance of Carrie's song, and in addition to a back catalogue of some of her other tracks that she's working on. So it's going to be a screening, concert, a bit of Q&A as well, so, and a bit of a party. So I think it'll be quite an exciting event for those who are interested in coming.
That sounds really positive. And if people want to find out a bit more about some of the things you've mentioned, are there the places that are best to go, kind of social media websites and places like that, to find out or keep up to date with the things that are happening as well?
Of course. We have a website called, the address is www.graysonvalefilm.com, and you can find us on Instagram and X, formerly Twitter, using the handle at Grayson Vale Film, both accounts.
That's very helpful. And I think hopefully lots of people will check out the updates and kind of keep an eye on what's going on and get involved when you've got those campaigns running as well, and support the project moving forward. I guess it's just before we round off, also be interesting to hear from you, kind of you're moving forward with lots of different projects. You said at the beginning, lots of different things happening. Are there things that you kind of personally want to get out of this project, or you're hoping are achieved through kind of audiences coming along and being part of the project in their own way as well?
In terms of...
It can be in any, like, what are you...
What am I hoping to get from it? Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Right. Okay. The aspiration. Well, I hope, my hope with this project is to kindle a new and urgent conversation around the issue of mental health. And I think cinema is a universal language. It can be appreciated and understood wherever you are in the world. You don't even necessarily have to speak English in order to appreciate the medium. And I think that's really, really exciting about it. And I think, as we've discussed through the conversation, that there are lots of issues that I don't think are not necessarily discussed in the popular discourse. And I think this film will provide an outlet for that. And so I that's my sort of aspiration for the film. I have no real sort of personal aspirations for myself get tongue-tied. I have no personal aspiration for myself for this film. I'm not using it as a springboard for anything. It's just that's my sort of my only hope for this project is that, really. But there is one other completely different thing that I'm working on at the moment, and that is the 48-hour film project, which I'm a city producer for the Brighton 48-hour film project. So the idea is that filmmakers will make a short film in 48 hours. It's quite an exciting sort of premise. And to prevent people, you know, trying to game the system, each team has to include a line of dialogue, a prop, and a character name. And they go off in 48 hours and they make their film. And then they judge it. Then we judge it, and then the winner goes to Filmpalooza, which is in Los Angeles. So it's quite an exciting little competition that we're running in July later this year. So I'm gearing up for that as well.
That sounds really cool and a really fun, different project, especially a lot of the things we've just talked about with Grace and Vet. A longer term kind of thinking about the script and being really mindful of the content you'll use, planning for cast and kind of the composing that's going alongside that. And as a sort of an alternative, a different type of project, that must be a really fun thing to do or to be looking forward to as well.
Absolutely.
As a
balance, yes.
Yeah. As an alternative, I don't know if an alternative is the right phrasing, but yeah, just something different and a chance to be really creative and fun in a different way.
Yes, I mean, it's complete opposite from Grace and Vale. I mean, like, Grace and Vale has been sort of many months in the making, whereas the 48-hour film project is like, it's forcing people to be creative in a very short period of time. And that's quite exciting. And we ran it last year, and we had the screening at the Duke of York Cinema in Brighton. And we had an incredible turnout of people to not only make the films, but also to come watch the films. And the quality was absolutely exceptional, really. I don't know how they do it, really. But it just goes to show that necessity is the mother of all invention, really.
Yeah, and just the opportunity to develop and self-reflect as well, I imagine, on... Look, these things can be done in a shorter time. So the time we spend on something, let's make it really valuable. And the difference, I imagine, that you see with, like you say, this longer term project where you're looking at least months, if not longer, to pull a topic together where, yeah, loads of reflection and insights and expertise that you're drawing from other areas as well. Just a really interesting comparison to have. It would be very interesting to the conversations you'll be having later this year then, after that has happened. I imagine will be really insightful having had both of those two very different experiences at a similar time.
Yes, yes. Well, variety is the spice of life, and I like to sort of throw myself into as many things as I possibly can, and I think that's really rather exciting to keep pushing the boat out, keep doing different things, because I think if you keep doing the same thing all the time, it can get a bit monotonous, really. Mm. And so, yeah, I just like doing, keeping busy, doing all sorts of different projects, really. Yeah,
amazing. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for coming on and sharing kind of your insights, your expertise, the Grayson Bale project as well. Really interesting to hear how that's progressing, and encourage people to kind of look out for those updates and go and look at the website or follow on social media and get involved in whatever way feels appropriate to you as well. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us.
My pleasure, and thank you very much for having me on your magnificent show.
Thank you for those very kind words.
These are real people. They do have struggles.
And it starts to get on my nerves. I just shut down.
So many people suffer from mental illness.
To get the word out that men have got to start talking.
A lot of people don't understand the depth of the situation, so they can't appreciate, yeah.
It's difficult dealing with our minds. And the suicidal thoughts were back.
People knew that there was something not right, but they just never really said anything, or probably felt like it wasn't their place to say anything.
You're not depressed, it's all in your head. That's probably the statement I've had people say the most.
I mean, this shit is real, and it's hard, it's exhausting.
Sometimes you need somebody to just give you permission.
And I think people realise how helpful that one conversation can be, just to figure out why you are feeling the way you are.
Not only did this help me to write it, it potentially might have helped some other people as well. So it sort of started from there.
People just want to know that they're safe to talk and share these things.
So many people think they're alone. And then you hear other people talk about it and they think, oh, that's so brave, or I could relate to that. And then they want to talk about it.